This is Infants on Thrones. Philosophies of men mingled with humor. We are the Quorum.
Welcome back to Infants on Thrones. I'm Glenn Ostlund, and we are getting ready to start the next listener essay contest. It's going to happen throughout the month of May 2018. But before we get to our new listener essays, I thought let's meet the winners of the last contest that we did in February. So there were three winners. There was Delaney and Pete and Liz. And today, Tom and I sit down with Delaney, and you can get to know her a little bit better. And then I'll also put her essay at the end of today's episode because several of you have already heard it, but want that to be associated with the interview with Delaney, who is awesome. Delaney, you're awesome. You know you're awesome, Delaney. You know you're awesome. And look forward to more content submissions from Delaney, because I don't know if you heard or not, but she's kind of awesome. So here's that interview. So, Delaney, how are you feeling?
Good. Feeling good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And just give us a little bit of background with, like, what's your story?
My story?
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell the short version. Okay. I left the church, like, 4 years ago, and it kind of all happened right after I moved out of Utah, which I think was a good thing, because I moved to Western Maryland, and now I live in Charleston, West Virginia. And although I live in the Bible Belt, it's given me a lot of space and breathing room to kind of, I think, process things without being under the pressure of, you know, the culture of Utah.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, I left about 4 years ago. I had like issues, you know, with the patriarchy, and it's always about the patriarchy, you know. And then I put it on the back burner for a little while. And then I was scrolling down Feminist Mormon Housewives Facebook page. And the first time I've ever seen CES letter ever brought up, it was like, don't click on this if you don't want to lose your testimony. So I'm like, oh, that's crazy. That's garbage. I'm totally clicking on this. And then like 8 hours, I was reading it all night long and probably like laughing by the end. It's not like I hadn't seen the stuff before or had not seen the stuff before. I just, to see it all in one place, you know, it was like, oh, I just like, it was like finding out Santa Claus wasn't real. Like I couldn't recover from that. And then I thought, well, you know, I think I'll probably, I'm an agnostic. I'm not ready to let the idea of God go yet. And this was all the same night. I thought, you know, I think Jesus was kind of like Joseph Smith, just like 2000 years earlier. And I don't know a whole lot about the Bible, but I know enough to know, to feel that way. And I was like, nah, I'm an atheist. I'm good. I'm good without God. And I know there's semantics as to, you know, what qualifies an atheist or not, but
all in one night, man, that's impressive.
It really was. It surprised me. And that my husband, you know, there's that whole story of trying to bring it up to him, and he knew I had issues with, I was always bringing up stuff about, you know, women and like how they don't even pray in conference and that kind of stuff when I was still believing. And, well, I did all this processing without him. So one day I was like, I don't want to be a member anymore. And I was like, what? Or I don't consider myself a member anymore. I don't believe in any of it. And, he's still a true believing Mormon to this day, and I'm still an atheist. And I think part of the whole thing that drives me to write is to kind of share things that like that we have to do, talk about, give and take, that kind of thing to make it work. Mm. So
And is it just recently, like this past January, that you decided to start your blog, or had you been writing before that?
Oh, no, 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 no. So I've never been a writer per se. I mean, I've written for school and stuff like that. I went to Utah State, if that matters to anyone. Not BYU. But I have a degree in biology and secondary education. So, going through that rabbit hole of church history, there were so many things where I was like, you can't make this stuff up, like blood atonement and some of those really wacky things you start learning about. And you're just like, man, this would be such a good dystopia novel. And it would run itself. You wouldn't even have to make anything up. So I played with this idea and I would talk about it with people. And I've got it all up here. I just have to, like, sentence by sentence write it out.
So is that what you're, because you mentioned before that you're writing a manuscript, is that it's the dystopian Utah novel?
Yeah, okay. So novel? my blog is like, okay, I'm not like a writer yet, so I need some kind of a platform to like practice writing, get it out there and kind of establish myself in the interwebs. So that's what my blog is about. And then you had the listener essay contest, and I thought, well, that's a good challenge for me, and I'll try doing that. So yes.
And you did it well.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Very
well.
Really well. And had you ever done any, listening to the different essays that were submitted, some people did inserts and drops and music and others didn't. Mm-hmm. You did. And you went to great lengths to make sure that it was all royalty free music. And
stuff didn't. Like that. After listening to other people, I was like, oh man, I could have done way cooler stuff.
But had you ever done anything like that before? Or was this your first attempt at putting in those drops from The Office and, you know, those different things that you grabbed, right?
Yeah, I didn't do the Michael Scott one, no.
Oh, you didn't? Oh, that wasn't...
No, that was one that I heard and I thought, oh, that's a good one. Yeah, no, I hadn't done stuff like that before, but I really enjoy editing movies and family movies to like music and stuff. So I have a video editing software and I just did the audio for that. I just use that program to do an audio and, you know, cut in different stuff. So when I like imagine writing a story, it's always to music. I'm always like a song will come on and I just get lost. It's like a screenplay in my mind and the movie's going in my mind. So I think I always think I could be like a good movie editor, at least in my mind. I think I could.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
It would be a dream job to edit movies and music videos or something like that.
That would be fun. I'm excited to see what unfolds on your blog as you write this dystopian Mormon. Like, how do you picture it? Is it like a dystopian future? Is it the past of Mormonism?
Yes.
What do you have?
Future. Yeah, it's here's the can of worms. I'll get talking about it and I'll probably lose the audience because, you know, it's one of those things where I either get blank stares from people when I tell them about this idea, or they're like, oh my gosh, that would be so cool. And sometimes I can't tell the difference just by looking on their face, what people's reactions are. So I don't want to give too much away because I think there's value in like building momentum, but what I picture is like a future that's ravished by biological warfare, and that will kind of be explained in another, like a sequel. So for this book, it's, well, the series, see, there's a whole series in my life.
Yeah.
Three.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe 4 months long, you know,
sure.
It's called, Memoirs of Dogma and Dissent, and they're fictional memoirs. And so it'll be like older women. It'll be badass women. It'll be like American Girls, but international.
like American Girl doll stories. Is that what you mean?
Yes. Each book will be a different girl.
Oh,
yeah.
Cool. Wow. Cool. I've been reading the Kaya one with my 9-year-old. She's totally into Kaya right now. the Native.
Yeah, and maybe I'll get my own doll line out of it. You never know. Okay, so the first book is called Retrenchment, and I went back and forth on that title for a long, long time because it's weird. It's kind of a weird word, and I had written like 4 chapters probably like 2 years ago, and I'm really glad I put it away and came back to it because the way I wrote it wasn't like a novel at all. It was like a New York Times article.
Yeah.
So, cause I read nonfiction mostly. I like lots of books, but I mostly read nonfiction. And so it was very like, and then this happened and then this happened. So I'm glad I put it away and came back to it. I would say that's probably the biggest challenge is writing a good, compelling story with everything that comes with a good novel, like character development and setting the scene and the tone without being over the top and too schmaltzy.
Yeah. My experience when I've tried to write things and, you know, I've written screenplays and started novels and things like that, I always get overwhelmed by the literary conventions that I'm supposed to hit, you know, and it always seems like it kind of stifles whatever creative energy that propelled me to write in the first place. And I get stuck like going through editing and then, you know, like that inner critical voice that's like, nobody's going to like this. And I'm going to do something else. And so I stop and do something else like podcast. It was Tom Perry, actually, his voice on a podcast that really encouraged me to break out of that and try something different. So thank you, Tom.
Because I was speaking on a podcast, Glenn, give it up.
You were. No, hearing you on Mormon Expression and listening to it, I'm like, if that guy can do that.
Then anyone can.
Then anyone can.
This guy. listen to how amateur she is.
No, but I think there's something to that, though, that it's whether it's amateurish or professional or trained or not trained, it's really about your passion for it and not letting those other things squelch it. And, you know, I think with Mormon Expression for sure and Infants on Thrones, I hope it's more about like trying things and sure we like fail and don't complete some of our projects sometimes, but the new book of Abraham, I'm going to complete. I've done the first 3 chapters. I've finally wrote the final 4 and I'm going to.
Oh, is that still a thing? Wow. I thought you gave that up.
I know. Right. I went back and I looked at it. The first one I did 3 years ago, like 3 years ago in March. Yeah.
Wow.
Chapter 1. And then chapter 2 was just a couple, like 4 months after that. And then it was like a year and 2 months before I did chapter 3. And it's been a year and a half since then. So
I can't even remember. I can't even remember if they're any good.
Oh,
I'm sure they were. So,
and they must not have been.
I
like it.
I was like, oh yeah, that was a thing. That thing.
Yeah.
All right.
So the point of saying that is that Delaney, I can empathize with the, feeling overwhelmed that you've got to hit certain literary conventions and stuff, but wanting to encourage you to push through that because I've been to your blog, I've read what you have there, I really enjoy it, and so I'm
forward
to seeing this stuff come out.
Well, I did want to ask Delaney. You said you read almost primarily nonfiction work. Has it always been that way, or did you sort of transition into nonfiction more primarily after your faith crisis? Because I can say from my own experience, I was a pretty heady fiction guy before my faith crisis. And then it was like, I just couldn't get enough educational material after my faith crisis. I don't know what kind of switch flipped in my brain where it's like, all right, enough of this nonsense bullshit. We've got to start putting legitimate stuff in here now.
Yeah, it's all the stuff that you thought was nonfiction that turned out to be fiction. And you're like, I got some making up to do.
Right.
Yeah, I read a lot of fiction nonfiction even back in high school. Like my favorite book in high school was Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning.
Wow.
I think I've been into learning about real stuff. I read the books I needed to, and I didn't really have to read any fiction in college. So some of the fiction books I have are, my mom gave me this book called The Bees, and it is like, it's from the perspective of a drone inside a honeybee hive. So that's kind of like a dystopia, because they have literally a hive mentality in that one.
Huh.
They're bees. Since leaving the church, like, there's so many books I still have to read. Like, I really want to read all of, like, Dawkins, and I've read his one, Blind Watchmaker. That's a really good one.
I think I've only read The God Delusion of his. I want to read Selfish Gene, but I haven't read The Selfish Gene.
Yeah, they're all on my list. But I was going to say, the other hardest part of this project I'm trying to do is, one, I don't pretend to be some literary genius, but I do think I have a good story in me. So that's the goal, is like a compelling story. The second one would be, or the second point would be, it's really hard to write a story that has themes in it that have to do with the church without it being about the church, because I want it to be for a broader audience. But that's why I say I'm so glad I put it away 2 years ago, because it was very like an ex-Mormon wrote this, versus now it's for everybody, not just the ex-Mormon community. Right. But it's hard to do that. So I'm hoping by the end I'll have like little nuggets that people who know about church history and the ex-Mormons might be like, yeah, that's because this really happened and Brigham Young did this. But
can you give an example of some of those themes that are hard?
Atonement. Yeah, okay.
Blood Atonement?
Yeah, so stay tuned to my blog, because I'm going to do an excerpt from my Blood Atonement chapter. And it'll be the Blood Atonement as Brigham Young taught on steroids. execution style. It'll be gory. It'll be great.
Javelins and everything, huh? All kinds of weapons.
Yeah. Just the slit across the throat, the literal ear to ear.
Oh, yeah.
Across the throat. And it'll be totally like,
you kind of have themes like that, like not exactly in The Hunger Games, but the kind of, and I'm thinking about that story, The Lottery, and I forget who, it was one that I had to read in English. Do you know which one I'm talking about, where like the town, they all get together because once a year they have to draw this piece of paper out of a hat. The one who gets the black hat is the one who's killed. They're like the scapegoat for the entire town. You know,
I vaguely remember that.
It seems like those themes would kind of mirror Blood Atonement without being Mormon Blood Atonement.
Yeah. Well, I'm just stealing that one straight up.
Do it. Go for it. Make it.
Yeah. That one I'm just stealing straight up. But like the community, it's very like, I have a Pinterest board for it where I'm like, I'm very visual. So I have to picture this community, and it's like everything's like white or gray cement, very monochrome. And everybody wears white, very simple and plain. And there's this kind of like culture of, we want to stay pure. And what's on the outside of the walls of this community is this disease that there's not a cure for. So you don't want to go out into the world because you're going to die, basically. So I'm excited, because it gets like, conceptually, it's like kind of running around up here in my head, but it gets more and more, it comes to life as I write the chapters. And I say chapters, I'm working on chapter 2 right now. So it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work. It's slow going.
No, that's cool though. Are you fascinated with the whole Brigham? Have you gone down the rabbit hole of Brigham Young? I just recently finished the John Turner book.
I know like probably the most controversial stuff. I'm sure there's a world of stuff I still don't know. I'm always learning.
I know, but you have to pick and choose the stuff you want to learn, right? And I don't, have you kind of gotten away from like going down the church history stuff? It sounds like you
only because of time. Like only I still want to. Like I remember learning that Brigham Young, his one redeeming quality in my mind is that he would have citizens cut little rectangle holes like cat pathways through the fencing so the cats could go freely from yard to yard, and that helped keep the rat population down. And I was like, okay, Brigham Young, that is because I like cats.
Cool. That's
the one redeeming quality of the cat man.
The cat man. That's pretty good. I didn't even know about that one. I just know about all of his really shitty attributes. I'm like, trying to not focus on those.
Like there's the anecdotes that he really wanted his shipment of liquor to get across the plains. And that was one reason why the leadership for the Martin Handcart Company made such poor decisions, because he was kind of pushing them to get his supplies out, which included liquor. And that was one thing that I was like, oh, well, they don't really tell you that on Pioneer Trek, do they?
That's what I do laugh when this is the place monument up in Salt Lake County, when historically he didn't really even say this is the place. And when you really go through the documents of what that time was, he was struggling with Rocky Mountain fever, and it just, you know, they hit the valley after they come through the Rocky Mountains. And it was almost like he just said, oh, this is far enough. Let's keep going. This looks pretty good. There's water over there. There's mountains behind us now. Let's call it a day. That's what it seemed like he did.
Yeah.
No, we're not going to make it to California. We're good.
I remember learning that too. Yeah.
But I am curious if I can probe you a little bit about how you pulled the rug out from your husband.
Uh-huh.
Because I'm still in a mixed faith relationship with my wife. So has it been difficult? Have you been able to navigate it pretty well? I mean, because it seemed like when you said, yeah, he's still TBM and I'm just as atheist as before, I'm like, well, yeah, but that's a pretty big differences that you guys have got to navigate now.
Yeah, I mean, it's not easy. It's hard. And I think we just got to a place where I had to be okay that he wasn't going to leave the church, even though I did. And he got to a place where he was like, okay, I'm okay where she's at. I can accept that. And we just kind of give each other space to believe what we believe.
Oh, wow. So early on, was he trying to pull you back in and you were trying to pull him out? And then both of you kind of resigned to the fact, like, all right, we just have to accept we're on different journeys.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I would try to share stuff with him, like, you know, just CES letter and lots of stuff on Mormon Think. And it was never received how I took it. And I think for him, there's more at stake. Like, I'm the type of personality that can, if something's not working for me, I can part with it and be okay. But I think emotionally, it's so much more, the church means so much more for him. Not that it didn't for me, but I don't know. I think because of, and I don't want to speak for him either, but I think because, like, he can't just explain his spiritual experiences away scientifically, where for me, I was like, oh, that totally makes sense why my prayers were ever really answered. Oh, cause there's no one there. Like, and I'm okay with that. I'm like, okay, well, actually that's a lot less stressful to me, because then I can just concentrate on making good decisions based on the information I have, which is what I was doing all along anyway. And I don't have this like emotional baggage to deal with, like trying to get an answer and fasting, and is fasting going to give me a leg up on getting an answer? And I just don't like, I just don't like dealing with bull crap.
I love the way you presented that about, is fasting going to give me a leg up on getting an answer? You know, like I know that this child right here is really sick and needs to be healed, and maybe God will do it. But if I fast, he might do it even more.
Yep.
Right.
I could get a leg.
And I did. I really thought that.
Right. It's a relief to not have to think those things.
Right.
No, is what you said. Like, yeah.
No. If I'm going to get better, I'm going to get better. If not, it's been a good life. Peace out.
Yeah.
See, fasting is like the fast pass at Disneyland. You can yeah. see ahead for a bunch of people.
It's like mushroom power on Super Mario.
Mushroom power. Yeah, because I actually went down to my dad's and I was helping him shovel because we got slammed with a big snowstorm. And he said, yeah, the steak's been fasting and praying for moisture, so you're welcome. And I was like, yeah, I don't know. Doesn't snow come whether you fast or pray? I don't know. Whatever.
Right. Yeah, and honestly, I think it's been good for me to realize that not everybody interprets information how I'm going to. And we talk about stuff all the time. And we talk about politics. He's more conservative. Yeah, we talk about stuff all the time. We can have our own podcast. I keep telling him, like, we should just record this conversation. Yeah, then I think we would be the only people that would think it was interesting, you know?
Hey, don't show it to
me. You wouldn't. Smart, but then the rest of the world's like, oh, what? No, this is boring.
I mean, you did an essay and you hit it out of the park. So I think you're being a little self-critical on that. I think you'd be pretty good.
Yeah, and my husband, he's not on social media at all. And sometimes I feel like I'm like, just go like hang out on Reddit, like the LDS Reddit, like, you know, just go hang out there sometimes.
That's a safe social place, yeah.
Right. Go. Ask him some of these questions, but he's just like, good. He gets annoyed that I bring up church so much. I bring up church so much because I'm like, hey, did you hear what the church did in Salt Lake? Did you hear the news? And he's like, here we go again. Like, I'm good. Like, I go to church. Our ward is super relaxed here. All my friends in the ward, they know I've left the church. Still ask me to babysit for them. Like, we're good. And it's really cool. And that's what I meant earlier, is I don't think living in Utah, it would be like that. I don't know.
Yeah, I think you're pretty fortunate as far as geographical location. I'm not dealing with the level of shunning that I used to deal with, but there's still aftershocks. What was it? There was a family that stopped by earlier. And then when I came in, it was just like, oh, okay, well, we got to go. And I don't know. It could have been that I hadn't brushed my teeth, or it could just be the fact that, oh, there's Tom again. So it's always been weird, but I've just kind of come to accept it. It's fine. Whatever.
Yeah.
Sucks.
Yeah. I think the less you care, the happier you are. Which is kind of sad, but I think you have to get to that point.
I want to compliment you on a part of your essay, but I messed up earlier, and so I'm a little hesitant to do it.
Why? Because you might be thinking of another essay.
Right? No, yeah, I'm like, I sure hope I'm not thinking of another essay. But I listened
to all of them.
Yeah, but you made the point that you like a bouquet, like you like variety in your life, right? That was your essay. I'm not confusing that with somebody else. Okay,
good.
Good job.
Me.
Good job.
I love that. And so what I'm thinking about that as I'm listening to you talking about, you know, your relationship with your husband, things that you like to talk about, that maybe you would even be bored if he totally agreed with everything. Is that the case? And you kind of like being able to have somebody challenge you and that you can challenge him and have these discussions?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if I, well, did you ask me if I would like it? I don't know if I would dislike it, because it's nice to have people be like, yeah, that's so true.
Yeah.
That's nice too. But I definitely have had to think about, really think about why I believe or don't believe what I do. And, you know, what exactly is my stance on whatever political stuff, because he'll grill me, he'll ask me questions, and I've never been very good at speaking. Like, I stumble over my words a lot, and just our conversations have really made me have to like figure out what exactly I'm trying to say, what's in my mind out. And there'll be a lot of times where we'll talk about stuff and then we're pretty like combative in the conversation, and we'll both kind of step away and a couple of days later come back to it and have like a really good come around, like meet halfway kind of conversation.
Jeez, that sounds very, I don't know, mature.
Yeah,
like kind of healthy. Huh?
Yeah, very healthy. I don't see, I mean, in my own experience, I see when I get hot-headed or opinionated and then I take it to my wife, and sometimes I don't keep my own emotions or my own sensibilities in check. And like, if I'm like, read the CES letter and I'm not going to leave here until you finish it, and then you're going to have the same opinion as me. And I don't care what it takes. You know, if we need to be here all night, we will. And because I still haven't quite been able to reprogram my brain that my opinion isn't the opinion that everybody should have. I still feel that way. I'm still constantly checking myself like, what? Why was Glenn laughing at that joke? That doesn't make that's not funny. or if it's anything else, you know? And I'm like, what? That doesn't make any sense, because that doesn't jive with my perspective or my opinion. I think I'm better, but I'm not quite there. So kudos to you and your husband for kind of being in a much healthier place.
Well, thank you. It takes a lot of work, and it takes a knowing of, you know, let's come back to this later, because we do get emotional. I get probably more emotional than he does because I'm a girl. Just kidding. I think there's a lot of, like, he listens to Sam Harris too, which is like,
you can't say that.
We talk a lot about his podcasts. You can't say that about a lot of TBMs. So no. That's cool. And, I think it feels like I'm sticking up for, like, I have to make an argument for what Sam Harris says, but I do the same thing with him, thinking he needs to answer for all the members of the church and the church as well. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and that's when I get frustrated. Like, I don't know. Like, I'm not like sponsoring Sam Harris. I'm not advocating for him. Yeah. We both are secular humanists, I guess, or an atheist, but not everything he says I agree with. And it's the same for him. Not everything the church says he agees with.
So with your husband.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right.
And parenting and everything like that. We agree with most things. We just get there a different way.
Huh.
So how do you, there's a couple of different directions I want to go, because I want to talk about Sam Harris. Because you mentioned that something about the Sam Harris Russell Brand episode inspired something in you. And I found that episode so incredibly frustrating to listen to. It just was hard. Because I love both of them. I love listening to both of their podcasts, but together, I felt like Sam Harris was Russell Brand's kryptonite. He couldn't be articulate at all. And it was really weird.
So
I was wondering what you got out of it. Yeah.
Yeah. I must've been in a good mood, because I was laughing, because Russell Brand would just like come up with the craziest rebuttals. But then I loved how he was making fun of Sam Harris's like hypotheticals.
Yeah.
Because they are ridiculous. remember when Russell Brand was like, oh yeah, and then here comes, oh, then what if someone has sex with a baby, you know?
Yeah, right.
Like, his hypotheticals are ridiculous, but I think those hypotheticals need to be thought about. It's not that I think he's wasting everyone's time. It was just, it was like I said, the angel and the devil on my shoulder, and Russell Brand is the angel and Sam Harris is the devil. And like, sometimes I just have these two voices that are like, oh yeah, humanity, like we need a better humanity, and people need to just believe what they believe and look past that and focus on common ground. And then there's the other voice in my head that's like, why are people so stupid? Like, well, humans bother me sometimes a lot.
A lot of humans, you're right.
A lot of humans. Like, why do we have to be so idiotic sometimes?
I'm fascinated that Sam Harris is the devil on your shoulder.
Yeah. Russell Brand he's such an egomaniacal jackass most of the time.
Well, I guess in that conversation only, and I put him as the angel because he was giving people the benefit of the doubt. And yeah, honestly, that's the only podcast, that's the only time I've listened to Russell Brand.
Really?
So, yeah, I haven't yet. So,
good job.
I should probably explore him a little bit. But
let me wholeheartedly recommend what was the documentary? It came out a couple of years ago. I think it's called Brand: A Second Coming. And he talks about his transformation, his enlightenment, basically. And so, like, this guy that I think you're remembering, Tom, that's the big jackass Russell Brand that was, you know, doing stuff on MTV and whatever from about 8 years ago. He went to Africa and saw all this poverty, and he realized this is exactly the same system that's giving me all of my wealth. And he couldn't get that out of his head. And so, like, he was married to Katy Perry at the time. They would go to these fashion shows, and he's like, this is just so empty and vapid, and there's people on the other side of the world that are suffering, and I've got to do something about that. And he just went through this like fame crisis, you know, not faith crisis, fame crisis. Yeah. And it's a fascinating, fascinating documentary. And to see where he is now and what he's doing with his life, I find really inspirational. I got his audio book on addiction, which is just, it's fun to listen to. But it's also really insightful. And yeah, so I would encourage more of the Russell Brand stuff. And Sam Harris is always good to listen to too. I love listening to Sam Harris.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, so what, if you said, Delaney, that you have over 50 podcasts,
let's see, let me get my phone. Hang on.
Oh, okay.
That was just a rough estimate, and my husband says I'm bad with numbers, so we'll see if that's true.
Because I'll compare notes, and maybe you can turn me on to some good ones. Because I've been through some real crappy ones lately.
Well, there's a lot I've had to unsubscribe from too, because I just don't have time to get through them all. I'm a stay-at-home mom. This is why I have podcasts. They save my life.
Yeah, you can multitask with them, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
How old are your kids?
7, 4, and almost 18 months. Mm. So they're little.
Yeah.
Almost. 7, is the whole talk about baptism coming around?
It's totally up to her. And so if we're at church and someone's like, if somebody asks her if she wants to get baptized, then I told her, I don't want you to feel pressure. It's totally your choice. If that's something you want to do, you do it, and I'll support you. And my husband's on the same page. So if they say at church, Stella has chosen to be baptized, they say that, and it's kind of not true, because you can't really choose if you don't have another choice.
Yeah.
With her, it will actually be a choice. And I know there's the whole, like, well, you're just pushing her into an institution that's not good for girls and women. But for us, it's more of like, that's our, the faith tradition. And to me, she can always leave, you know, she will always have a choice to leave, because I left, and she can see that. Yeah.
Yeah. You'll be her ally. Yeah, right. You'll be her ally and confidant in the thinking outside of the belief structure. Yeah.
Right. And growing up in the church, you didn't know there was even another option, because everybody was in the church, at least for me, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Out-of-staters, I'm sure it's a lot different. But yeah, so it'll be her choice. And no, she won't have any one-on-one interviews with any bishopric. And we've talked about that, and we're all on board, all on the same page with that. So I'm just like, whatever my kids decide, I will be like, Hail Mary, I'm an awesome parent. If my kids don't end up in jail or murdering people,
I know, but isn't there going to be a threshold in your mind where it's like, yeah, well, I don't want my daughters to feel like they're lesser. You know, that they can't achieve things that, you know, the male gender can, and especially if an institution like the LDS Church that sort of ingrains that thought, like, you know, become a homemaker, you know, make sure that you're worthy for an RM, and, you know, make sure, right, you're taking care of the man, sort of thing. Because that always worried me with my daughters, because I didn't want that. I wanted them to feel like that they could excel, not feel like they needed to, you know, shortchange their lives because that's what the church was telling them.
Yeah, that does stress me out a lot. I just have to always talk to my kids, yeah, every step of the way about it. And I tell them all the time, like, you know, I don't believe in God. There's a lot of people that don't believe in God, and that's okay. You can choose what you want to believe. Yeah. And I can't use the Santa Claus analogy because they still believe in Santa Claus. So
you have to wait on that one. Yeah.
I have to wait on that one because I feel like that's how it was like for me, where it wasn't like, it was a little bit sad, but it was also like, oh, that makes so much more sense without God in the picture. But I know it can be a lot harder for people to let go of the idea of God.
You could go the Greek mythology route.
What's that?
Oh, the children's versions of the stories about Zeus, mm-hmm, and Hades and Poseidon, and, you know, where they start to see that these, you know, once upon a time, people believed that these gods were real and that these stories that they're telling were real. And, you know, now we just use them as allegories and entertainment and, you know,
yeah,
what kind of lessons can you learn from them without putting too much of a belief in Zeus as a character? So you can preserve Santa Claus and just throw Zeus under the bus is really what I'm saying. I'm going to talk right now because he's pretty wicked with those thunderbolts. Tom's wondering, yeah, like, yeah, see, idea. That's not funny. I don't understand. Like, why would Glenn laugh at something like that?
Well, because it was your joke. That's why you laughed at it.
Yeah, okay.
Hilarious to you.
Yeah.
It's really funny to be joining the, like, the whole blogger knackle. Do they still call it that?
I don't know.
I think that was an FMH thing. The whole interwebs of Mormon and ex-Mormon land, like, mm-hmm.
Is this a recent thing for you?
Yeah, I've always, mm-hmm, listened to Infants on Thrones, and I've always been on Reddit and on the little groups, like the VIP Facebook group, and listened to every episode of Mormon Expression. But I haven't ever contributed to anything, so it's just kind of like doing it all over again almost.
Are you glad that you did?
Yeah. No, it's fun.
I am.
Yeah.
Yeah, no kidding. So am I.
No, it's crazy that I'm talking here with Glenn Offlin and Tom Perry on Infants on Thrones. That's cool.
Yeah. I was thinking, I can't wait I'm going to be speaking to Delaney.
Right.
That's how things are.
Yeah, I'm going to be famous one day. I'm going to be like Hunger Games.
Yeah.
J.K. Rowling. Yep, exactly.
That's right.
Cool. Well, are there any other topics that you want to touch on? I mean, you know, because I've already given you the invitation. Anything that you want to do for infants, especially if you're like working on your book, I'm going to start doing a book, actually.
What?
Yeah. I'm going to start.
Are you doing it just because Delaney's doing it? You're trying to upstage her now?
Nope. No, I mean, she may have inspired me a little bit, like all of the listener essays kind of put some wind back into my sails. But no, I was one of the reasons I'm finishing up the new Book of Abraham thing is because I want to take that approach to the Book of Mormon.
And, to the Book of Mormon?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah. It took me 3 years to get through five chapters of the Book of Abraham. So, but I've already so done the first, I've already written.
Exactly.
So what's that?
What are you doing exactly? Are you rewriting it in like Ebonics or what?
Not Ebonics. I mean, kind of the way that I did, the new Book of Abraham thing, where I just assume this persona that's talking to the audience that, you know, like I'm Nephi or maybe I'm Joseph Smith or, you know, maybe I'm this, you know, and I just kind of like rewrite each verse of the chapters and trying to pull out where I see meaning and value in what's there. I think if you look at the Book of Mormon as this big allegory about, your true inner soul, which is the divine part of you. We'll call that God, or we'll call that Nephi. It's all those things that are good, the charity part, the love part, the things that are actually good in the real world. And that there's a battle that goes on between that and your own shadow, your own doubt and criticism and bitterness and anger. And it's like this battle within yourself for supremacy. Who's going to be the Lord that authors your life? Is it going to be this Jiminy Cricket inner voice, or is it going to be the, you know, which devil on the shadow? Is it going to be Sam Harris or Russell Brand? Right. So right. It's kind of looking at the Book of Mormon from that approach, that it's not about these people that lived on this place that never existed and, you know, doesn't stand up to scrutiny when you're thinking of it literally. But if it's a personal metaphor for every individual person, and
yeah,
so that's kind of the thought experiment going into it. So I'm calling it Shadow the Lamanite.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I started writing the first eight chapters, and it's been really, really fun. It's like really fun to go through and do that. So yeah.
Did I tell you that my daughter read the Book of Mormon from start to finish in, was it a month?
Really?
She's dating a return missionary now, and so one of his stipulations is, I need you to read it. And so she read it. So I was really curious. I'm like, so what'd you think? How was it? She's like, I don't know, Dad. I mean, I've read a lot of really, really great books. This was not one of them.
Yeah.
It was really boring.
Uh-huh.
She's like, the stories just didn't really make a whole lot of sense. Some of them seemed way over the top. Like she mentioned was it the Ammon one with the arm cutting off thing? That didn't, she's like, it just didn't really jive.
Right.
And I said,
I'm going to be treating that as kind of like if they're Aesop's fables and you're making comments on them and trying to find like, what's the moral of the story? So what lessons can you learn from the Ammon cutting off the arms? I haven't gotten that far yet.
You know what story in the Book of Mormon that I used to use all the time, that I even had of like a plaque or something like that with the scripture? It's, you know, where is it? Alma and Amulek, and they're standing there. They both have the power of God, and they could stop all these people being thrown in this pit. Mm-hmm. Women, children, everybody. They're all getting killed. And then I think it's Amulek that leans over like, shouldn't we stop this? I mean, they're being killed. And then I think his Alma's like, nah, God, the power of God compels me not to. I was like, what an asshole. I mean, these are people who are getting killed. I don't know. That always, I mean, I'm debating a fictionized book right now. So whatever. It's,
yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, I kind of had to deal with that a little bit with the Laban piece, you know. So I've already written the Laban part, and like,
oh yeah,
my Nephi killing Laban, what's that really about? And
did you wash the clothes before?
No, but I mentioned that. I mentioned that, you know. Yeah, so but anyway,
I think your book is gonna be a bestseller at Deseret Book.
And I'm going to go back to church. And like, as I'm promoting the book tour, I'm like, I've repented, y'all.
I used to be a really big,
prominent ex-Mormon. I had my own ex-Mormon podcast, and I've converted all of them back. Every single one of them, starting with Tom Perry.
That's right. Marco,
the Source for Good, as we're reclaiming the Book of Mormon. Yeah, that's not going to happen.
I'll write a little blurb on the back of the book. Says, not one Tom Sy. No. Reading this book. So,
I wanted the blurb on the back to just be.
You just wanted to be the Tom Sy.
Yeah, just.
I didn't laugh once. Tom Perry.
Yeah. Cool. Well, but so that was a tangent. What I was really going with that was to make sure that you know, Delaney, that invitation is open to you for anything that you want to do with your book or audio, or if you want to record conversations with your husband and publish them on Infants on Thrones.
Well, if he's not on social media, I mean, you know, it'd be good to introduce him onto podcasting and just say, you just don't have to be on social media. You can just talk.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
I have gone through all of the responses that came from the listener essays, and I've got the Excel spreadsheets formatted. I just need to email them out. So I think I'll do that tonight. And you'll have to let me know later on as you read through the comments of people that are responding to the essay that you wrote. I hope that it's meaningful for you. It was really touching for me as I was looking at the comments that people were giving, and the ones that leave their name and email address that you could become friends with, and you know, like have this network and stuff. Like, I don't know. I just think that's kind of cool. I never even thought of that before doing this. It just like, yeah. So thank you for the listener essay. Congratulations on your second place prize. You'll be getting one soon, and hope that you continue to contribute in the future in any ways that you feel compelled to.
I will. I'm thinking of doing a first, maybe second chapter audio drama with music and everything.
Nice.
And sending it to you. That's no guarantees, but that's what I have in mind.
Oh, I would love that. I would love that.
Maybe in 12 months, you'll finally get an email with it.
You know? Hey. It took me 3 years to write three chapters in the New Book of Abraham. So cool. Anything you want to say in closing, Tom?
No, just major props, Delaney. I thought you did a good job. And thank you for just coming on. And yeah, it was great meeting you and talking to you.
Thank you for having me.
The Atheist and the Humanist by Delaney Darko. The atheist and the humanist were fighting for the crown. The atheist beat the humanist, but then was feeling down. Arrogance is widespread, so try to pipe down and focus on understanding what's in another's crown. This is a story about finding the balance between your inner Randy Snyder and the other part of you who doesn't want to be a total asshole to the believers in your life. It's a story that starts with reconciling our past as people of faith with our current standing as staunch skeptics. So let's start at the beginning. Former Mormons, you know how this goes. One day you are weeping over the pulpit in Relief Society about how Sister Olson selflessly brought you tomato soup after you birthed another child. Now you are posting selfies on the ex-Mormon subreddit, toasting a glass of gin and tonic to your fellow heathens with glistening, bare, virgin shoulders on a church-free Sunday. You were all in, a righteous son or daughter of God, called to represent Jesus Christ in the 11th hour. Now look at you, getting drunk on the snark that drips from ex-Mormon forums and wallowing in the internet fallout of bad church PR. I went from goddess in training to a tattooed, coffee-drinking, social justice Christian atheist. What the hell happened?
What the hell?
A crisis of faith, deconversion, a fall from grace, sleeping with Satan. Bottom line is, we don't believe anymore. The details of how it happened are complicated, to say the least. The poor soul who ever asked a recovering Mormon why they left the church. I have vomited my church-induced anger on a handful of people, and it's never pretty. We send out mass emails, we write the long Facebook posts, we write letters to our parents, spouses, and children. We try to legitimize our disbelief with loved ones so that they will accept us. And even if they don't leave the church themselves, at least they know why we did. The evolution from devout to disenchanted has a traceable path. To those of us who have gone through it, hearing another's journey of losing their faith rings painfully familiar. Sometimes the only place to commiserate and be free to express our anger is on the internet. So we share our experiences and the things that we have learned, and we find ourselves bonding with strangers. We learn we are not alone. We aren't crazy after all. The common experience goes something like this. A collection of doubts, guilt, and unanswered questions build up until a watershed moment roars out of us like a freight train. Somewhere along the way, we had our minds blown, and the universe looks a whole lot bigger. Like a spiritual experience, there has been a shift, and it feels profound. Monochrome to Technicolor, baby. We are reborn. The ex-Mormon moment is now. Over the last few years, we've crept out from the dark corners of the internet into a thriving public community. I don't want to spend time writing about why the church isn't true. That space has already been carved out. I want to think bigger. People are leaving their dead beliefs all over the place. It's bigger than leaving Mormonism. We are part of a broader world community of dissenters with eerily similar stories. Spend time chatting with other ex-Christians or even ex-Muslims, and you instantly see the commonality. The religions that once set us apart are now bringing us together as we forsake them. Secularism, humanism, and atheism are more and more amalgamating into a broader platform that leads the world in advancing human rights, scientific discovery, earthly stewardship, and in my opinion, holds humans more ethically accountable than the religious world does. But I want to think bigger still. The back and forth between the religious and secular communities is tiresome. There will always be bad ideas that need to be called into question, especially those that are so steeped in tradition that they often get a pass. But we also have to reach outside of our newfound secular circles. Can we find common ground with the believers in our lives to foster rational conversations and connect on a level that transcends our own moral truth? Or will we go from one flavor of dogma to another, isolating ourselves from anything that disagrees with us? There is often a conundrum in my head that goes something like this. Can I criticize religious ideology and still have meaningful relationships with religious individuals? Sometimes the Mormon Church really does make me mad. I keep a pulse on the happenings in the church, and I get angry about certain policies and doctrines that are damaging and hurtful. I get mad that members make excuses for institutionalized practices. By calling it church culture, it's dissed and yet still tolerated. I get mad that no one holds a higher standard to the men who claim to speak for God. I get mad that the church whitewashes its history to inaccurate levels of propaganda. I get mad that facts get coded as anti, therefore null. I get mad when members are complacent in social justice issues because everything outside of the gospel doesn't really matter. Jesus. That's atheist me. But my husband is still a practicing Mormon. We do have a pretty awesome relationship. It's never been better, actually. We have worked out a good balance to accommodate both of our belief systems. We love to travel, be outdoors, explore the city, rock climb, ride bikes, roller skate, eat well, dance party, parent like nobody's bitches. Yeah. My parents and siblings are Mormon. I love them. I genuinely like being around these people. I couldn't live without my sisters and my awesome genius brother. My in-laws are Mormon. They love everyone they meet. They love me like a daughter. Their children are all down-to-earth, normal people. I love them all. I have an amazing group of Mormon friends where I live. They knew from day one I was an atheist, nay, an apostate. They don't care. We even talk about issues in the church from time to time. of the time we talk about birthing and funny things our kids say while simultaneously breastfeeding and pushing a swing. Culturally, I am still very Mormon. I do have a spicy peppering of friends outside of Mormonism, but on the whole, my social network has vastly been Mormon my whole life until I moved out of Utah and left the church. The fact is, I enjoy the dialogue I have with people of faith. It helps me think about things differently. I don't like being surrounded by people who look just like me, think just like me, live just like me. Eep, bop, boop, bop, eep. Ew, that's too robotic. I need a bouquet of people in my life, as much as authenticity can allow. This is humanist me. I like to follow the ex-Muslim subreddit. It's eerily similar to the themes on the ex-Mormon subreddit, and the ex-Jehovah's Witnesses, and Black Atheism. The stories of leaving one's religion are just as interesting as the religion itself. We are kindred spirits. My secular friends hold a special place in my heart. I listen to Sam Harris. I don't agree with everything he says, and oh my gosh, I can't meditate. Squirrel! Wait, what was I talking about? Oh yeah, hardcore atheists who publicly criticize bad ideas brought to you by religion. You know the scene. Richard Dawkins, Ayaan Hirsi Ali, Lawrence Krauss, Majid Nawaz, and Black Freethinkers, to name a few. I'm glad there are people out there having these conversations. All ideas, especially religious ones, should be up for scrutiny. Just because they are special to someone doesn't mean they are untouchable. Yeah. Atheist me. Just this weekend, I met a Muslim woman my age. She was wearing a hijab. Our kids were playing at the mall play place together. Her daughter was telling me about Moana and Maui. We got talking about library story time, our kids getting sick, and New York City. She's from Brooklyn and recommended some sites in Manhattan for next time we visit. She seemed like a cool, easygoing mom. I hope we bump into each other again to exchange contact info. I don't care one shit of a bird's brain case that she is wearing a hijab or that she is Muslim. Humanist me. Later that day, I'm scrolling Twitter, getting sucked into the hashtag No Hijab Day movement of ex-Muslim women who unwrap and burn their hijab in defiance.
You go, girl!
Hell yeah. Atheist me. Do you see the whiplash that is going on? I think it speaks to a broader problem that society has to learn to reconcile. There's online life where we speak freely, audaciously even. It's a place to get out the anger and frustration. We can be irreverent, sacrilegious, and laugh at things we once thought holy. Online, we can give a giant middle finger to what's wrong in the world. Then there's real life where we face people, not an ideology. I'm at least self-aware enough to realize the possibility of online sentiments disfiguring how I view people. The World Wide Web can be toxic. You have to constantly self-correct. If you aren't careful, you get sucked into the vitriol. There is a certain type of Mormon that I try not to be, and there's a certain type of atheist I try not to be either. Negative and judgmental. Unfortunately, social media brings that out in all of us. So what's the antidote to the venom of online echo chambers and pitchfork parties? Dialogue. Respectful, open-minded conversation. We have to work hard at fostering genuine relationships with people outside of our tribe. We have to leave our virtual sanctuaries and talk it out for realsies. Still be critical of bad ideas, but then take your passion off the screen and into something real. Stand up for inequality. Get involved in local politics. Challenge the status quo. Stay thirsty for knowledge. And teach our kids the values that we want to see in the world. While we do this, may we cultivate relationships with believers and non-believers alike, doing the dance of listening and explaining our positions. Progress is slow, but it doesn't happen when we build up walls. I used to view the world in more black and white terms, but now I'm seeing the gray and the red, blue, green, and neon pink. Humans are complicated creatures, and life is incredibly inspiring and sobering all at the same time. It can be overwhelming to take it all in, yet we stumble along, learning and growing into the person we want to be, intelligent, fearless, persistent, and loving. So I'll continue to learn about belief despite my agnosticism. I'll try to stay respectful, even if I don't agree. I'll try to empathize with the meaning others find, and I'll always strive to see the good in people and the beauty in our human complexity. I'll try to use my skepticism for good. I know that atheism and humanism are not polar opposites. I know I can be both. I just worry that my search for truth will alienate me into a box. I don't do boxes. I do rainbows. In summary, I might not agree with you, but I love you. Let's go meet for coffee. Oh, you don't drink coffee? Well, you can get whatever you want. I'll be getting coffee.
Yeah!
If you like what you heard and you want to give my written word some time, please visit my blog. It's www.delaneydarko.wordpress.com. Glenn will put a link to it from the Infants on Throne page. Right, Glenn? Right? Come on, support an up-and-coming writer. After 4 years of ideas bouncing around in my head and some horrible first starts, 2018 is my time to put pen to paper and hands to keyboard. Click on over and follow me for some poetry, short stories, book reviews, and updates on my manuscript I'll be writing. You can also follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Google+, and Instagram under Delaney Darko, DelaneyDarco. Thank you for listening. I am a force for good. I am Delaney Darko.
Hi, this is Stan from Canada. When I'm out and about, I like to listen to Infants on Thrones. They're the best, eh? You can comment on this episode on the website, www.infantsonthrones.com. And if you really like what you hear, give the quorum a 5-star rating and write a short review on iTunes. I did. Anyone for the closing prayer?
I don't have the patience for that. I don't have it.
Yeah, and that's probably why those conversations, like, Christians probably love those conversations, because they're like, yeah, he's totally doing all these zingers against Sam Harris, and they're probably like, yeah, I got a scripture.
But Jordan Peterson's not a Christian believer, is he?
Who knows?
He's
ask him.
He's agnostic.
If you were to ask him, he wouldn't say yes or no. He'd give you this 20-minute answer, and then at the end, you're still just as confused.
Is he like the John Lennon?
John Lennon's been pretty clear on what he thinks about God. I mean, we did.
Well, okay, but I'll do that.
Reluctant
atheist.
Oh, that's true.
You
would never say the A word.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to
Infants on Thrones.
Infants on Thrones.